So, you know, there's always the this connection between the Torah and the Haftarah portion, and our connection is the spies. With Joshua, with the spies, and the report of the spies, and our Haftarah is from the book of Joshua, and we now see that there are a couple of spies involved here anyway. So anyway, this our portion this morning from the Haftarah is an account of Joshua sending out two men to spy out the land one more time before they actually go into the land. And I'm going to set this up, and it's from the book of Joshua. My message is not from the book of Joshua really this morning, but I'm just going to set this up and then we'll go on from there. So here's what happens. They come to the house of Rahab. Rahab is a prostitute. We always need to be reminded of this. She was an unlikely person that would be brought into the mix of this story. Not only that, but just a reminder, and I'm just going to go off after this, she eventually becomes into the lineage of King David and Messiah Yeshua. So there is a prostitute, a Gentile, that comes into the lineage of King David and then eventually into Yeshua. But the emphasis here is she is an unlikely choice by God to do what she does here. And so now here's what's happened. The king of Jericho, he finds out about these two men that are coming into the land, and they stay at the home of Rahab. And the king of Jericho finds out about this, and so he sends some of his men to find the two men that are hiding out in Rahab's house that are going to be spying out the land. And so Rahab hides them, puts them up on the roof until the danger passes. Okay, so now I'm going to go to Joshua, and actually this is the only scripture that I'm using from the Haftarah portion before I go on, but let's look at Joshua 2 verses 15 and 16. And then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall, and she dwelt on the wall. And she said to them, "Get to the mountain, lest the pursuers meet you. Hide there for 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Afterward, you may go on your way." Okay, so that's our setup here. My message this morning isn't about Rahab, and my message isn't about the spies, although we have that connection between the Haftarah portion and the Torah. It's not about either of them. It's not even about, really, anything else that goes on in the Haftarah portion. Here's what it's about this morning. It's about the rope, okay? It's about the rope this morning, and here's why I chose to talk about the rope this morning, because rope, it's such an uncommon thing. We all have rope somewhere in our garage. We all have rope somewhere in the house. Thin rope, thick rope, long pieces of rope, maybe small pieces of rope. But we all have rope somewhere around the house. And rope can be used in so many ways to fulfill so many different tasks. When Rahab was using it, it lowered the spies into safety. So it can, rope can lower objects and even people. Rope can hoist things up. You can hoist things up with rope. You can hoist up objects. You can hoist up people if you want to. It can stabilize objects. It can be used to drag things. Rope is very useful in our lives, etc., etc. Rope has a lot of different tasks, and it's used in a lot of different ways. So here, it was used in the sparing and in the safety of these two men that are doing by extension, they're doing the Lord's work, because God had promised them the promised land. And so now they are going in to spy out the land one more time to bring information back to Joshua and to the children of Israel about going into the land. It can be used for good. Rope can be used for evil. Kidnappers use rope to tie up the kidnapped, to stabilize them. Thieves use rope. Rope is something that can be used for good, and it can be used for evil. And so in the Brit Hadashah, in the New Testament, there is a passage where rope is used, and that's what I want to talk about this morning, because it plays a significant part in God's great work and in God's great plan. So let's go now to the book of Acts 9, 23, 24, 25. Now, after many days were passed, the Jews plotted to kill him, but their plot became known to Shaul. Shaul is the hymn. And they watched the gates day and night to kill him. And then the disciples took him by night and led him down through the wall in a large basket. So, why was Shaul's life in such danger? First of all, let's understand, it says here the Jews, but it was the unbelieving Jews. It was the Jewish people that had not come to accept Yeshua, or let's say had not yet come to Yeshua, because probably some of them that were against Shaul in the beginning accepted Yeshua later on. But this is what the problem was. So let's go to those next scriptures. So Ananias left and went into the house, and he placed his hands on Shaul, and he said, "Brother Shaul, the Lord Yeshua, the one who appeared to you on the road as you were coming here, has sent me that you may see again and be filled with the Ruach HaKodesh." God blinded him. He put scales on his eyes, and then he sent Ananias to lay hands on him and pray with him, and so that he would be able to see again and be filled with the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit. And immediately he began proclaiming in the synagogues that Yeshua is the Son of God. But Shaul was being filled with more and more power and was creating an uproar among the unbelieving Jews living in Damascus with his proofs that Yeshua was the Messiah. See, he had all this zeal. God had done this wonderful thing with him, and he actually had this meeting face to face with Yeshua, the resurrected Yeshua. And he was filled with the Ruach, filled with the Spirit, and immediately he started going to the synagogues, and he started preaching Yeshua and showing them proof that Yeshua was the Messiah. You know that it incensed these Jewish leaders, because he probably had some good proof that Yeshua was in fact their Messiah. And so this is why they wanted to kill him, because they didn't want to believe in Yeshua for whatever their reason was, and because he was speaking against them and turning the people against them. In a sense, they wanted to kill him. They wanted to get rid of him. So now we have this group of Yeshua's disciples, and they come to Shaul's rescue. And they took hold of a rope. We can assume it was a rope tied to a basket. And they lowered it down to safety. And it's amazing, right at the wall, they lowered it, it says, at the wall, they lowered it down, and they lowered Shaul into safety. It's very similar to Rahab, the way Rahab lowered the spies to safety so they could escape the king's men. And now the disciples basically did the same thing so that Shaul could escape the non-believing Jewish people. So the scene is the basket being lowered, but obviously there was someone or some people, it says the disciples, they were doing the lowering of the basket, and really that's what I wanted to talk about for just a few minutes because of my time, just for a few minutes this morning. I wanted to talk about the people that are lowering using that rope. They didn't necessarily know what was going to happen when they lowered Shaul to safety. Shaul, serving the Lord in his excitement, in his zeal. And so these rope holders help Shaul to be lowered so that he could be spared, his life would be spared, so he could preach another day. And we know that he went on to do a lot of preaching, not just one more day. At that moment, I don't know if they really knew what a great act that they did. They just knew that one of their fellow believers was in danger, and they acted and put him in a basket, got the rope tied, and lowered him down the wall. But I don't know if they really knew what a great thing that they did was. They didn't know that Shaul would go on to basically write so many letters and preach not only in synagogues in every city and town that he went, but then he would go as he was directed to go to the Gentiles. And let's always remember, although God called Shaul to go to the Gentiles, to be a light to the Gentiles, to tell the nations about Yeshua, he always went to the synagogue before he went to speak to the Gentiles. The priority was that he would go to the Jew first, and then he would go to the Gentiles. And so, because of all these writings and teachings that he did in the synagogues and to the Gentile communities, the third of the New Testament is written by Shaul. Did those disciples know that one day the Shaul that they were lowering and down, the Shaul that before that was a killer of Messianic Jews, was a hater of Messianic Jews, was opposed, like all those other non-believing Jews, was opposed to Yeshua being the Messiah and who he was? Did they think that this Shaul that now came to the Lord, that in his zeal was going to his fellow Jews and telling them and showing them proof about Yeshua, did they think that one day, even thousands of years later, his letters would comprise one third of the New Testament? They didn't know that. They had no idea of that. Did they know that he would shake up the Roman world? He would shake up the nations. Let's remember, what we call the Roman Empire was really just about the known world outside of Israel. Did they know that there was going to be a major shaking up of the nations because of that man that they lowered down that basket? They had no idea what they were doing there. They had no idea what a great thing they were doing. And yet Shaul needed assistance. He needed support. He needed protection. And he had faith in knowing that God was going to protect him. But he didn't know how God was going to protect him. He didn't know that his fellow believing friends, the disciples, he didn't know that they were going to come to his rescue. All he knew was God is going to protect me. God called me to do something, and God's going to protect me in some way. We need to do that too. If you really believe that God is calling you to do something, and you hear that voice, whether it's a still, small voice, or it's a loud, booming voice, and you believe God is calling you, and you believe it's not your flesh, and it's not the enemy, and it's not people around you talking, and you believe that God, in fact, is calling you, you know that God is going to protect you to allow you to do the task that he has called you to. And that is what happened with Shaul. And he didn't necessarily know exactly how God was going to do it. He just knew that God was going to do it. And that's it. He didn't know about the basket. He didn't know about the rope. He didn't know what was waiting for him. All he did was what God called him to do. I'm calling you to the nations, and I want you to go to my people first. And when you go to my people, and either they accept you in those synagogues, or they kick you out on your rear end, then you go to the nations. Then you go to the Gentiles. That's all he knew. He didn't know about the basket, he didn't know about the rope, and he didn't know about the rope holders that were going to lower him down. Ministry can be thought of as burden sharing. Those disciples took it upon themselves to even risk their own lives in allowing Shaul to escape. If those leaders, those Jewish leaders, would catch them, just as they wanted to kill Shaul, they could have killed all those disciples too. But it is about burden sharing. That's what ministry is about. We are all responsible, each and every one of us, to take part. We are all responsible to help. We are all responsible to assist, and we are all responsible to contribute. It doesn't mean we all have to be leaders of congregations, or elders, or board members, or coming up and doing Torah portions. It doesn't mean that. God calls each and every one of us as individuals to do something to be a part of doing that. These disciples, not one of them could say, I'm the one that lowered Shaul down. They all probably took hold of the rope. I don't know how heavy Shaul was. I don't know how big of a guy he was. But it was him in the basket. And so it needed a number of guys to lower him into safety, slowly lower him down. And so they all took their part. Serving should not be a draining thing. If you find out that whatever you are doing, it's draining you, and you don't really have any joy in it, and there's no you're not appreciating anything, chances are God really hasn't called you to do what you're doing. It shouldn't be draining. It should be something, there should be a portion of it that's life-giving to you, that helps you with your walk, that draws you closer to the Lord, even if it's bad. It doesn't mean it's not going to be easy. It may be hard. It may be an uphill climb. But there still should be something that does something to your spirit and in your heart, that even with all the garbage that's going on around you, if you know that God has called you to do it, there's something that is life-giving. There's something that makes you, even through all the garbage, makes you happy. And people may look at you and think it's a weird thing, but that you will be joyful because you know that you're doing what God has called you to be. So that's why I say it may be draining, but it should be life-giving. It should be a life-giving experience to you. Serving is like holding that rope, no matter what we do. And you don't know what or who is at the end of that rope. You know, you don't know if you meet someone in Publix and you just say a couple of words to them. And I'm not talking corner them in the, you know, I know people. They corner them in the in the thing where they can't get away, and they start telling him about Shabbat and you need to do the holidays. Oh, that's not what it's about. But just saying words to lead them to the Lord, to lead them to Yeshua, to let them see that there's something greater out there than they could imagine. It may only be one or two words, but you don't know who you're speaking to. Because that person might be an unlikely choice, just like Rahab was. They didn't know who was at the end of the rope. You know, we have, Diana, how many people do we have in the back teaching on a rotation? 28? Something we have. 20-something. Okay, I think it's high 20s. On a rotating basis, so that they won't get burned out, and they take their, and every week a few people, they go in the back and they teach the different classes. Those 28 teachers in Shabbat school, they don't know what kid in the back that they're teaching any given week will be raised up to be a Shaul. They don't know that. And God may not be revealing it to you or me, but you don't know who those kids are back there. Greeters, ushers, kitchen helpers, people that work in the Judaica shop, that many times they have an opportunity to speak face-to-face for a while to the first-time visitors, because the first-time visitors, many oftentimes, they go to the Judaica shop, they want to see what we have there. All these people, you don't know what that new visitor or new attender or a person maybe that's come for 1 or 2 months and you just haven't had a chance to really say anything to them, but when they walk through that front door for the very first time and you greet them or you seat them in a chair and let them feel comfortable, none of you know if they will be the next Shaul. You're not going to know who they are. And they may be, in your mind, an unlikely choice. You're not going to know if they're the next Shaul. People that are on our Shalom Brevard Facebook, that are, I don't know if you're a friend, I don't know how it works. If you like it, if you're a friend, but we have Shalom Brevard. And we send out our posts sometimes a couple of times a week. You know, we try to send things out. We'll send out, and my message goes on every week, usually within 1 or 2 days of Shabbat. And you all get it. We send out little blurbs, and we send out little videos, and sometimes we even send out little testimonials, Jewish people that came to the Lord. So all of you people that are on Shalom Brevard Facebook, if you share that by just clicking a finger or clicking a mouse or tapping the pad on your laptop, see how new, how hip I am now? I said laptop. You don't know who is at the end of your rope, of your friends, or maybe your friends' friends. Those are people at the end of that rope. You don't know it. You know, sometimes we have to take an attitude, should I share it or should I not share it? Here's the attitude. Oh, what the heck? I'm going to share it. And it's going to go out there. You know what? It may go out there and be dead in the water and stop there. But you don't know who's going to hear or read what you shared. That person might be another Shaul for the body of Messiah. You don't know that. These are the things we need to be aware of. Even menial tasks have eternal value. We need to remember that. I think we should all have that as a motto, maybe print it out and put it up somewhere we can see that. By your computer, on your refrigerator, whatever. Menial tasks have eternal value. What may seem to be menial can have eternal value. But you don't know that because you don't know how the Lord's going to go and carry it. You don't know. You don't know just the way they didn't know. They really didn't know who was at the end of their rope. They knew that it was one of their apostle disciples. They knew that he was a friend. They knew that he was one of their Jewish brethren. But they really didn't know what Shaul was going to eventually be. And we don't know who is at the end of our rope. Take hold of that rope, people. Do something with it. You don't know who's at the end of the rope. Sometimes it may be a cost to hold on to the rope. Sometimes you're going to have to do something. Should I hold the rope or should I do this? Should I hold the rope or should I do what I wanted to do? Should I hold the rope or should I do this or this or this? There are plenty of this and this and this that can distract us from going over and grabbing the rope and holding the rope. But we don't know what's at the end of that rope. But the rewards are life-changing, and they are joy-instilling, and they are eternal. The rewards are eternal. So that's my little bit of encouragement this morning. Take hold of the rope. You never know what or who is at the end of that rope. Shabbat shalom, everyone. Praise you, Lord.